On today's episode of Talkin' Tom, we're watching the movie The Post, co-starring environmental conservationist and father of four, Tom Hanks.
The Post premiered in 2017 and was directed by Steven Spielberg, and is the latest collaboration between him and Hanks that spans years of television and film projects.
So grab your typewriter and double-check your sources, because we're talking print journalism on our podcast.
Run it.
My mom always said, life was like a box of chocolates.
Everybody, welcome back to another episode of Talkin' Tom. My name's Josie.
I'm Daniel.
And this is the Pod Hanks Tomcast, where we watch Tom Hanks movies and talk about them.
Talk about them. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. How was your holidays?
Holidays was good. I went to Oklahoma, I saw friends and family, and then I rushed back home to see The Post.
Priorities.
This is important, yes. I saw Star Wars a number of times, and now it's time to focus my attention on Tom Hanks. I got distracted.
Smart.
Yeah.
I watched all the new episodes of Black Mirror yesterday. Literally all of them.
Oh, I'm behind. I need to watch those.
Yeah.
Just, I hear good stuff.
It's a good show. I mean, it's nothing like what we just saw.
It doesn't have Tom Hanks in it.
No.
Which it could.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. And they're saving that maybe for season 5.
He would be like perfect for something like that, because he's so like old-fashioned, but not in a bad way.
Yeah.
He'd be like the warning.
It would be a fun, since a lot of the people in the show get to be kind of character actors and do something kind of against their normal grain, it would be cool to see what Tom Hanks did.
I agree. So today we went and saw the movie The Post, starring Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep.
Yes.
I think Meryl Streep has first billing in this movie. Which makes sense. It's her movie. So today we went and saw the movie The Post, starring Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks. And it was the first time that you and I have seen a movie in regards to this podcast outside of your apartment.
Yeah, we got to go to a theater. It's our first new movie. As we're making the podcast, it's our first new movie in a theater.
Which is a real treat.
It is a treat. There's an audience.
Mm-hmm. Not very many.
No, a lot of older people.
Well, it reminded me, we went and saw the movie Bridge of Spies together. Do you remember?
Yeah.
And we saw it in some... We saw another matinee probably on a weekday or a weekend,
yeah.
And it was like the same exact crowd of people, like just a bunch of, I don't want to say older because that's not fair, but
people who grew up with Tom.
I think so. And are more nostalgic maybe about the content.
And appreciate the topical content, I think.
Yeah. I'll say that I didn't expect to like this movie so much.
No, I think I'm in the same... There's a certain type of movie that comes out this time of year that are very catered toward award season. Not all bad, but there's sort of a level you expect them to engage you at. And I thought that going into this, and I was kind of blown away by how far beyond it took me.
Yeah. The Post doesn't come out officially, the wide release, until January 12th.
Mm-hmm.
But since you and I live in the City of Angels, entertainment hub... Los
Spoiled.
Angeles, we got to see a limited release of this movie.
It opens, it's limited in big cities right now. We'll go wide for the rest of the world, or for the rest of America, and I assume some of the world, on the 12th.
So
we beat the system this time. We're ahead of the game.
Finally. So a brief reminder that this episode will contain some spoilers for the movie The Post.
Yes. But this is based on a true story, so if you know the true story, I don't think anything will hurt your appreciation of the movie.
So stupid sometimes. Yes, it's a true movie. So dumb. But I think we both say go see this movie, and if anything, this entire podcast will be a recommendation to go see.
Yeah. It's a nice... We had Bachelor Party, which was kind of a downer. And then we had the Polar Express, which is sort of a new classic for a lot of people. And now we have something new and fresh.
Untouched.
Untouched.
I haven't read any reviews.
No, I hadn't read anything about it, which is cool.
I've seen, like, little things and I've shared some things on Facebook. But I haven't read any thing. And I'm glad I didn't.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot.
It's sort of the movie, it pairs perfectly if you're a fan of All the President's Men. It actually would be the perfect double feature.
I don't think I know that movie.
It's about the Watergate.
Oh.
So it's about journalists uncovering Watergate.
Ooh, la,
so
la.
It actually is like a sequel, basically.
Yeah. Okay. Explain the movie for the people who are listening.
The Post is about the Washington Post, who is led by Meryl Streep's character. And they come into... And they obtain the Pentagon Papers, which cover sort of the cover-up that was the Vietnam War that the government had been covering up. And the New York Times had gotten a hold of it first, and they start to publish things, and they get barred by the president to stop posting things. And the Washington Post obtains these documents, and they have to decide what they do with them. And that's sort of the crux of the movie.
Mm-hmm. The ultimate question of, like, what is their job as journalists? Are they there... Yeah. To protect the governing or the governed.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic.
Yeah.
I think it's something that my degrees in communication and broadcast journalism, technically, and the school that I went to focused really heavily on journalism. And so many of my classes were about print media and things that I was, of course, like rolling my eyes over because all I wanted to do was make TV shows and just didn't really care about reporting. But there's something so noble, I think, about a journalist. And this movie really captures that. Just like this dedication to telling the truth and acting like the watchdog for the government. It's like they can't get away.
And it's cool because it's sort of pre-social media. So you see people, how they behave as they talk about these other reporters as kind of celebrities and also their... nemesis, as they, so-and-so's disappeared for 3 months, he's cooking up something big, and there's sort of like a mythos to these people and what they're about to unleash, because they're not going to tell anyone because it's dangerous to tell and also could spoil and give the story to another paper.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this weird mystery of like how these reporters work and how they get their content and how they check their sources and then ultimately get to publish it.
I feel like a real dummy because I never understood how newspapers were printed. Like, the printing press itself is such an intricate little... And there's a beautiful little montage, probably in, like, the third act, would you say?
Yeah.
Yeah, where they show the little thing sliding into place and being stamped in. I was like, that just... I was fascinated.
That made a lot of sense with how we viewed Tom and also his relationship with Steven Spielberg, because they both... Spielberg's a very nostalgic director. He likes things in the past. The details he puts into that printing press feel like something Tom Hanks appreciates, too. It's the details of this machinery that does something greater than itself. And there's even a shot of a typewriter at the beginning of the movie that I thought was...
We
like,
both,
that was
like,
intentionally.
Looked at each other.
Yeah. That was put for one person.
There, yes, I agree. I do feel like this movie, from what we know about Tom, like, this is his movie.
Yeah.
Like, this is... the kind of stories that he wants to tell and the things he wants. Because at this point in his career, he's got his choice. Like, he can do whatever he wants. So the things he picks and the things that he decides to put his name onto, you know they are meaningful to him and they're roles that are challenging and important.
But the last 10 years, he's taken a lot of really interesting roles. And so when he comes back to something where with a director that you know is kind of tried and true for him, you hope that it's something interesting and important, and I think this is. Especially, this movie was made before we got into sort of before the Me Too campaign came out, but it seems like the most important and appropriate movie for that movement right now. So it's all about these white dudes in power who control information from the presidency to the newspapers, and a woman in charge who is having to figure out her place. And they talk a lot about what that means and how she felt suppressed and how she's moving past that, as in the plot of the movie. And I thought that was so cool because I don't think they 100%, I mean, they didn't know what was coming, but now it just seems like a movie about now.
Yeah.
Which is dark because this is from the 70s and it takes place in the 70s and we're in 2018 now. And I don't know, it was really cool. I thought that how topical it ended up being was took me by surprise.
I agree. I think even, and we'll have a whole portion where we talk just specifically about Meryl Streep's character. getting to see a character like hers and that story being told, I felt like a sense of like a sisterhood and like a kinship almost to her character and everything she was going through, because it just means so much. Like, there was even a point where she makes the final decision about whether to publish or not on the phone, and I literally had chills. It's just amazing knowing you see the evolution of her character, and
it's great. They let her be someone who gets walked over and who is unsure of herself, and you watch her progress into her confidence, and that's through conversations with other women, but also conversations with what she deems important that I think her confidants sort of share. They're not explicitly telling her to do one thing or the other. They're fighting her every which way, and it becomes about her opinion because in the end, she is the one in power. And I think that's great that we get to watch that happen. Because there's a lot of men in the movie, and I think there's men that we, that me as a dude, can empathize with, and I think they want you to do that, because then when they start to do bad things, you're like, what would I do in that situation? And I think in that worldview, you would have been the same, because that's how you're taught, and they talk about that, that this is how people are brought up. The men go into the other room, and the women leave the table. When the serious talking starts, they leave the table. And they show that, and it doesn't brisquire that at all. That is like a point of the movie.
Yeah. That's still something I feel like was even present in my life growing up. And I don't know if it was more focused. Maybe it was more like, oh, the adults are going to talk now. Kids can leave the room.
But yeah.
This like separation of like what information is allowed to be given to certain people. And that scene was like particularly upsetting for me, actually, because I don't even know why Meryl Streep's character wouldn't be, Catherine was her name, wouldn't be included in topics of politics. Like, she literally runs the newspaper. Yeah. Why wouldn't she be deemed, like, appropriate? Like, why wouldn't that be something that she'd be allowed to participate in? Instead, she's forced to go in the other room with all the other women and talk about style, like, about clothing. Like,
well, I think the movie's smart because they don't ever, a character never says, well, why do we always have to leave? You just have to watch it and form your own opinion.
Yeah.
I think you immediately feel bad because we know that that's wrong now, but the movie never paints it as bad. It just paints it as this is how it is, and then you have to form that opinion. You have to form your viewpoint then and there, and I think that's really cool. It's not hammered in your face. It is presented as is, and then you feel as you do one way or another.
Yeah.
Especially interesting coming home from Christmas, because I think around family, I'm from Oklahoma, there's a lot of political talk, and I do, thinking back on it, it is all male political talk. There is not any discussion. It's between males. Anything regarding politics seems to be about that. And so that seems to be something from that generation and beyond that has carried on and hopefully is ending, because that makes zero sense. Everyone lives here. Having strictly a white male be the conversation piece is dangerous.
Yeah. It's how we get ourselves into trouble. Let's talk about Tom Hanks' character, Ben.
Okay.
Ben works as the editor for the Washington Post. Mm-hmm. So his boss is Meryl Streep, because she runs and owns the newspaper, but he's in charge of all the content in the paper, essentially. Right?
Yeah. I think he's presented as she's his boss, but he has the power.
Yeah.
For better and for worse.
Mm-hmm. Because he's so vocal.
Yeah.
That's a funny one. He's so, what's the word? Vocal.
He cuts people off.
Literally, like, puts his hand up to stop people from talking.
How much are like, if someone did that to me?
Run my face into that hand. He's very in control. He's very assertive. He's kind of everything that Meryl Streep's character, Catherine, isn't.
Yeah.
At least in the beginning of the film.
And there's a respect, too. Everyone respects him.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't seem to make enemies. He just has his attitude is a specific way, where he doesn't seem to be mean. He is just aggressive and in control.
And he's got this sense of justice that's very admirable, obviously, but almost a flaw, really, that he can't step outside of himself to understand the implications of what he's asking. So he's the one that he's all for fighting back against this. Is injunction the right word?
I think so.
That the Attorney General has placed on the New York Times, saying that they can't publish any more information about the Pentagon Papers because it has the potential to leak more government secrets involving the war or other, like, it's a breach.
Yeah, their excuse seems to be that if you share this, it puts the United States and our soldiers at risk. And so there's sort of a, they can't share anything that would do that. And so they have to be careful in what they share that would put the newspaper at risk of being sued or brought to court.
Right. And Ben is an unflinching advocate for the right to free speech, protecting that First Amendment right that we all have that allows us the freedom of the press and the ability to report on things that we see that aren't fair. It's the reason you and I can have a podcast where we talk about movies.
Yeah.
And nobody can shut us down.
Yeah. Less admirable, but still important.
I don't know that anyone would want to shut this down.
It's cool because it kind of becomes, that's Tom Hanks' character, Ben's arc, is that he is someone who stands for what is right, but it's also revealed that he has taken liberties with what that means in his past, and he's now asking Meryl Streep's character to do the same, to not have those liberties. And so there's sort of a reveal that he has maybe shifted over time, but he still has things to work out to make him, for him to stand by what he says and be absolute in his truth versus picking and choosing, being selective.
And you're talking about the close relationship he had with JFK.
Yeah, right? Sort of that discussion of you have friends and you have sources, and they can't be both.
Yeah.
And which is really interesting and something I've never considered in the role of a journalist, that you can't bridge that gap. There has to be a divide. Otherwise, you have a bias. That's kind of the crux of Meryl Streep's character, is she is close friends, personal friends, with the Secretary of State.
Yes.
Who was involved in writing these reports. So she has to kind of pick between, do I defend this person who is my friend, or do I go forward and let the American people, who this newspaper is for, as she says, know the truth?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a conflict she has to deal with.
And also, the stuff that's inside of that report is very damning. It's,
yeah.
I'm like literally just like learned a thing about American history via this movie, which is amazing. But it really puts it into perspective for her when she realizes that, I think the number they put was like 70% of the troops that were sent into Vietnam were sent in after they'd already known that there was no way they would win the war. So they're essentially just sending men out there to die. And the Vietnam War was so contentious to begin with.
Yeah.
That finding out that information is just another nail in the coffin for these people.
How does he describe it? He says 70% were to keep America from being embarrassed, basically.
Right. From being humiliated.
Yeah.
Because the loss of this war is more important to the presidency. Like, preventing the loss is more important than the actual lives that were at stake.
There's a lot of darkness to it.
Mm-hmm.
I was curious what you think. Something I've been thinking about a lot lately in the realm of shows and movies like this, which are historical events portrayed on screen, that I think teach a lot of people things either they knew of or didn't really know, and they're being taught it. And I worry when you fictionalize something, when you add sort of dimensions to it to make it a more engaging story, is that risky for those learning it? If you're not learning it from a history book, or you know it from a history book, but only the bare essentials, when you learn it from like this movie is sort of now in your head as the definitive version.
Mm-hmm.
And how, as an artist, how do you go about creating something that both is true to the source material of history in this case, and also is a good movie, but doesn't hurt those who watch it who may have a false idea?
No, it's interesting because the choice is between, well, not always, but telling a compelling story.
Yeah.
And telling the true story sometimes. That's the kind of the beauty of this story is, I think inherently it is a compelling story.
Yeah.
And we find that out through the journey of these characters. But I hear what you're saying about it being, as a viewer, the stuff that I know about the Pentagon Papers is pretty much limited to what I just watched in this movie.
Yeah.
But I have this drive now to go and find out more.
Yeah.
Because I want to know what the consequences were. And then what happened with Watergate? Like, who was the first to publish that? And was it really as, like, this act of solidarity between all the papers where they say, like, we're telling this story, you can't stop us? I mean, was it really that poetic and, like,
I didn't really consider it till like, there's just been a lot of good, because I have mixed feelings on biopics a lot of times, but there's been a lot of good or historical dramas this year, like The Darkest Hour and this, and shows like The Crown that are super popular, and like, what do they dramatize it as in true? Because I think a lot of people read that as fact versus sort of slight fiction. And so I think it's kind of an interesting realm to make content in this, in that regard. But I'm getting off topic. We haven't talked
time. No. No, I mean, I really enjoyed this movie, and it's something I already said it. I was just so surprised by. Anything else that you want to point out about Ben in particular? He has that wonderful conversation with Sarah Paulson, his wife.
Who she's part of, just to go back on the movie as a whole. The movie casts so many great actors and actresses. Oh. In small parts, but every part kind of gets this scene mm-hmm. of why these people are important and why they're someone you should maybe recognize from pop culture. And yeah, Sarah Paulson has a great scene where she gets to, you're like, what is she? She's in this movie. What is she going to do? And then she gets the scene. You're like, aha.
Because it almost seems like a waste at first to have all these very talented people in these like really side parts. I hear exactly what you're saying. And I think I had the same thought. Like, why would the only reason that she be in this movie is just as somebody's wife? She's so much more than that. She ends up basically convincing Ben or reminding Ben why Catherine deciding to publish the Pentagon Papers and the stories and the write-ups on it is brave, like, and is like a noble act.
Ben wants like the accolades of he's brave too, because Sarah Paulson says she's brave and here's why, and he's like, well, I'm brave too. And she basically is like, sure, but I can give that to your ego, but in reality, here is why what she's doing is so much beyond what you think you're doing, what your involvement is. And it sort of like puts him down a peg in a way that I think evolves him as a character.
Which, and I hope I'm not getting myself into trouble here. Here's something that troubles me a lot, is that in the past, and in a lot of the interactions that I've had with men, hashtag not all men, obviously, it seems difficult for a lot of men to, what's the word? This is the example that's jumping out to me. It's like a father not understanding why like sexual harassment is bad until it happens to his own daughter. And then all of a sudden he's like, that could have happened to my daughter. This is a horrible thing. We got to stop it. So, but like, why does it take you until you're a father to understand this culture is okay? Isn't okay. Does that, I know this is like,
maybe no, I think super so. Out of line. It's sort of that worldview that they're so comfortable in that they can just block everything else out until it directly affects them.
Mm-hmm. It just seems like he didn't understand how brave Catherine was. Literally, the entire company is on her shoulders. And just like Sarah Paulson's character pointed out, he can get another job. She's got everything to lose. Not just her job and her paper, her family business, her dignity, her reputation, everything is on the line for her. And he doesn't understand that until somebody like puts it into perspective for him and basically says like, what would happen to you if this was in your shoes?
I think that's important. Because I think his character looks at Meryl Streep's character as his boss, but someone he can kind of manipulate.
Mm-hmm.
Not even kind of, I think someone that he likes working for because he knows how to work things. And I think the movie gradually progresses, especially after that speech, of why he has to respect her, and gradually does and appreciates her opinion, when before I don't think he did. I think she was his yes man.
Because mm-hmm.
there's a conversation she has with another of her employees of kind of their troubles with Ben, and how Ben is sort of this dangerous type of guy because he does things unorthodox.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he's valuable to the paper, but also why he can kind of walk over her, and ultimately what she has to understand about him too, to make sure that this is her paper and she has the final word.
Mm-hmm. And her big moment, there was quite a few actually, but you're right in noticing a kind of an immediate change in Ben's character when he understands that she is brave, she has all this to lose, and it's ultimately her decision, and they all respect it. They all, I mean, reluctantly, to be noted, a few of the men in that room, when she, the final decision, after she's already made the call, let's move forward, and then they find out that they might be technically like accessories to treason or whatever they're being charged with. And she says, no, like, we're doing it. And they all realize it's not anybody else's decisions but hers.
And she's like, I'm going to bed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was beautiful.
I think that's important because I think if the movie let all of these men who have the warped worldview of that era and then things change for her, she takes command, and if they immediately shifted and were like, no, we're on your team now, wholeheartedly, I think it would be very insincere and feel very messed up. Instead, it is a great thing on her part that troubles them, and that's what they have to grow into, because that's how they have to grow as humans. And I think the movie shows that, and that's important that it shows that, because if they just became good guys, we'd be like, okay. Mm. It would be unearned and feel very strange in the context of everything else the movie stands for.
I agree. Catherine's, like, significance in this story is... it's just so important to me, at least, and I think it must be to a lot of other people. But we see her character go from being the one who's constantly shut out. She doesn't know how to... even if she has the information, like that very first scene with her in the boardroom, we saw her rehearse everything she wanted to say, but she found herself literally unable to speak the words that she knew she needed to.
And she always looks to her kind of confidant of what he's doing and always wants his opinion.
Mm-hmm. And then she has this kind of wonderful change of heart. There's this wonderful transition for her where she's being faced with this obviously crazy decision of putting her entire family business on the line. And she remembers a time that when her husband committed suicide, she was left to inherit the family business. That was technically like her family's business, which that blew my mind in the beginning when it said that her dad gave the newspaper to her husband, not to his daughter, which I'm like literally just flabbergasted by, but I get it. It was just, and she talks about it in the movie, like, that's just how things were. Everybody expected it. She wasn't hurt by it. She just literally,
she thought that she was proud because that's the natural order of things, and that's how she expected it to go.
So she's forced into this position that she doesn't necessarily want, and then realizes that she's like come to really love. She's always loved the paper, but she has to go give a speech after her husband kills himself. She takes over the newspaper, and she got a bunch of advice from her confidant, Fritz, I think his name was. There's a bunch of them. That was the one guy that was really up for discussion. And she just couldn't bring herself to say the things that he was telling her to say. And it turns out that her daughter had written a bunch of talking points that were exactly what she needed, exactly what was right for her. And I don't know how true this all feels like, could be fiction, but it's important for her character that she understands that her voice is much more important than she realizes it is. And that's, everything changes for her after that beautiful scene. Alison Brie plays her daughter.
Yeah.
She's
having a great year too.
She is having a great year. I'm a little on the fence about her like transatlantic accent that she puts. Like, it just feels a little out of place. But that scene brought it all home for me. Like, collective experience that we have as women of, like, feeling like our voices aren't heard. Even in a year like 2017, where it feels like it wouldn't be like that, it does still feel like that. And it was just really wonderful seeing her come into her own. And that's... She takes ownership again. And it's her newspaper. It's not that she's just the placeholder and she's the person, she's the mouthpiece for everybody else. It's her paper. She gets to decide. And it works out. It's like that girl in Polar Express.
Yeah. It's like the newspaper is her voice, and it has been sort of a shared thing, and now it is going to be defined by her. There's a great shot. Well, first, Spielberg is sort of famous for his blocking. He's very good at blocking and moving camera around scenes that are just people talking, and how do you make this interesting? But Spielberg, especially in this, uses the camera movement as a power dynamic. And there's one shot in particular that I really loved, which is they've made the decision to print, but now they've realized they can run into legal trouble. And they've all met at her house to sort of discuss this. And it's all these men arguing with her and pushing her either which way. And it seems kind of like no way out. And she asks her closest confidant, what do I do? And he says, I wouldn't do it. And they sort of start to discuss, and then at the last minute, the confidant, Fritz, he said to us, walks, who's always been next to her, walks away from her, sits in the chair, and as he does, the camera shifts with him and faces up, and the tallest people in the frame are Meryl Streep's character, who's talking to the other character who's very against her, and she says something like, well, I know, and if you're against me, then maybe you shouldn't be on this board. And from there, it's like, it is her. She now is in control. I think it's very cool how Spielberg staged that scene, because if you feel it in the movement as she feels it in her soul of a character.
That's a wonderful observation. I think those are the kind of things that, as like a passive viewer, I feel like I subconsciously, of course, pick up on them. Yeah. But that was, even when they're all on the phone talking, it's like you're almost like you're in the room with all of them. They're like frantically, you can hear them all fighting, and she's doing these nervous tics with her hands and like swallowing, and you see every emotion on her face. It's something that Meryl Streep brings to every single character that she does. And obviously she's known for her just like incredible performances. But the minute she says, okay, let's go. And then she just hangs up the phone. I was like,
if I remember correctly, that scene is really frantic and moving between everyone that's talking, but gradually it's just a close-up of her. Mm-hmm. And we get to watch every decision she makes without her vocalizing it till the end in close-up. And it's very cool because you just hear the other people yelling and arguing, and you just start to see it click to her. Mm-hmm. And it's very cool.
A very conscious choice, obviously, on behalf of the director. I loved it.
But there's another great shot where I believe it's for the signing of her company into the public to start selling stocks. And they zoom up these stairs, and there's all these women outside.
Oh.
And at first, I wasn't sure what I thought was happening there, but they all have papers, and I was like, maybe they're journalists, maybe that's something. And then they don't say a word, and the door's open to all the men, and then the door's shut. And we get kind of the reverse shot of that, which is when she gets the phone call to ask if we can publish this. And she goes into her office, and all these dudes follow her, and her assistant, she's like, there's a phone in the other room, and she'll show you where it's at. And the assistant turns, and she shuts the door, and for the first time, she is in the room, and they're on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so satisfying to watch them have to walk away from it.
And then another one is after they've had their first hearing with the Supreme Court, I think, everybody's walking out, giving their final statements, and Meryl Streep, Catherine, wades through this sea of women who, like, understand what she's done. And it's almost like, instead of moving against them like she was in the beginning when she was wading through this staircase full of secretaries and women who worked for men, suddenly she was like a woman of the people, like coming down into them, and they like welcomed her with open arms. It was
it's the perfect juxtaposition too, because it's the men who are like, here's the New York Times people, here's what I've done that's right, here's what we've done to save journalism, and here's one of the real heroes walking through unnoticed but important to the right people. Doesn't have to be the vocal and on camera in these pictures. To her, she's done her job, and she did it as she wanted to do it, and will now leave as she wants to leave.
Mm-hmm. Ah, yeah. It was so good. I needed it. I needed this story, and I needed this character, and I didn't even know.
Yeah, I think this will be a surprise. I think the release of this is a surprise, and I think how topical it is right now is maybe the biggest surprise in the best way.
I agree. There's a few things, something that we've been fortunate enough to notice in every film that we've watched, except for Polar Express, is the receptionist/secretary, which I think, and I was thinking about this, and I know it's kind of dumb, but it might be funny, if we call this, like, a Hanksretary or, like, Hanksionist, I don't know, it's, like, really forced. Hanksretary kind of works, right?
Could be a separate podcast talking about the secretaries working with Tom Hanks.
They've all just seem like they've got these intricate backstories that we can only just assume.
Yeah.
We don't. This one, the one in this movie, she was a redhead. And she was very, like, she always seemed very busy. But sometimes she'd just be sitting there drinking a cup of coffee. And at one point, she just, like, didn't even. It was like she wasn't doing her job. When that guy comes in with the shoebox.
Yeah.
She's just like, be my guest.
Yeah, this sort of, she completely understands, I think, his personality.
Yeah.
But it's also so calm and collective. Never, there's a lot of like stereotypes of secretaries where they're like rushed and busy and frantic, and she just is a cool as a cucumber.
Yeah.
And has got everything under control.
I liked her. I also liked, Carrie Coon's character.
Carrie Coon's, just to take a pause, Carrie Coon's is a blessing to everything she touches.
Yeah, I mean, she breathes life into the characters that she plays. I would put her up there with Meryl Streep, honestly. I've found her so exceptional in the few things I've seen her in, and this was nothing short of that. She's the only female writer in the actual, like, journalism sector.
Yeah, when there's a boardroom of people, she seems to always be the only woman besides Meryl Streep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's amazing that she can hold it on like that.
As I talk over you. Gets talked over a lot. Setting a good example.
No, I was not. No. Yeah, so she was another pleasant surprise. Just a lot of really wonderful. Oh, when we should talk. I mean, we should talk about the other men that were in the movie that were fantastic.
The casting of this is, there's so many people. I've seen the trailer once or twice, but I did not realize. Mm-mm. And so many of them are comedians, mm-hmm. and doing super serious, if a little.
What's
gonna have a little, like, Bob Odenkirk, uh-huh. and David Cross, Zach Woods from Silicon Valley.
I love him.
Jesse Plemons from Breaking Bad and Fargo.
Who is he, the guy that looks like Matt Damon, but isn't
he? Yeah, he was the other lawyer. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, small parts, but I think the people are so important to the story overall that you want someone recognizable.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you don't quite know what they're from.
Yeah.
And it was almost like a guess who. Like, who's going to appear next? Oh, yeah. Here's so-and-so. Well, then her closest confidant, Fritz, is the dad in Lady Bird.
Oh.
So, like, now two of my favorite movies of the year have this great... kind
common
of
thread.
Yeah, and sort of this figure that people look up to, and how you why that relationship's important, but also how you have to deal with that relationship.
Yeah, I haven't seen Lady Bird yet.
Oh, that's a good one. That might be my favorite movie this year.
How do you think this movie compares to? Well, I have two questions because the Oscars and the Globes are coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Compares to some of the other films that are in that same, like, its competition, and then in comparison to other Tom Hanks films.
I think it'll be interesting because I think this movie will get kind of typecasted immediately as, like, an Oscar bait movie,
mm-hmm.
which I probably would have done the same thing had I not seen it. And I'm glad I did because I don't think it's that. I think it's a very important movie topically and a very well-made movie. It doesn't feel like something that was made. I think it could and probably will get some award attention, and deservedly so for some circumstances, but it doesn't feel like a cash-in type of movie that I'm used to this time of year. It seems like, and I don't know if they knew this when they were making it, but, like, incredibly relevant and maybe the movie we needed right now.
It truly.
Yeah.
Did you read about Rose McGowan's criticism of Meryl Streep?
Oh, yeah.
And her friendship with Harvey Weinstein. Mm. So there's been this, like, smear campaign against Meryl Streep, which kind of, like, cuts, like, right into the, like, deepest part of me. For somebody, I don't know, everybody's got their flaws, and the main criticism is that she allegedly knew everything that Harvey Weinstein was doing, and she never spoke out because she was benefiting from it. She's released a very well-thought-out statement that kind of refutes all that, essentially saying that Harvey Weinstein didn't need to... he didn't need to harass her or, like, take advantage of her because her star was already so bright by the time he was doing that. So he targeted women who had much more to gain, when really Meryl Streep wasn't in a position of, he didn't have anything to gain from her.
Yeah.
I don't think. I think that's kind of the point. But they've been putting out these groups have been putting out these billboards with, like, "she knew" written across her face, just like that JFK poster that said "liar" on it. In the movie, and it's just kind of interesting. This is all happening when she's representing this character who did so much for women.
Yeah. I don't think I have enough knowledge to say anything specific about that, but I do think it's interesting, and maybe not the right way that, like, we're trying to paint Meryl Streep in the wrong way, because at the same time, we're taking so many evil people are being taken down, and that should be the focus.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of work to be done, obviously, on all sides. But that seems like a distraction, and I wonder who is. Not that Rose McGowan was distracted by it. I think that if she believes in that, and that's an important thing for her to say, but these campaigns were making her a public image of it, seem, I don't know, iffy to me.
It's too bad, because essentially what they're doing is just driving more press to this movie.
Against a woman, too.
Mm-hmm. And this movie's been in the press a lot.
Yeah.
Because Tom Hanks himself came out, and this might be our Hanks happening, but it's not. But he said that he wouldn't want this movie to be screened at the White House for a president's job, which is kind of like baller as hell.
Like if you left, this movie has a lot of fist pump moments, and if you left the movie and then you opened your phone and you read that, you would just do it again.
Yeah. Yeah. People speaking up for what they believe in. And I love it.
It's too fresh. I haven't watched... It's weird to leave a movie from the theater that's sort of still being talked about so actively that I haven't really read much into and have to talk about it right away because I just am on such a high from it that I don't know how to like negatively critique it yet.
That's true. We probably have very biased... I mean, we literally have dedicated a portion of our lives to Tom Hanks and his work.
And people are going to be like, oh, they liked it. Surprise, surprise.
Big surprise.
But I think from a movie standpoint, like, it never feels... It's so well acted. Great script. The pacing is nuts. I don't know how long that movie was, but I never felt any moment of slowdown or as if it was overlong. Mm-hmm. It was cool when we got to the credits, I noticed that co-written by a woman, executive produced by two women. Like, there were women all over this, and I think that has a lot to do with sort of the message, and I think it's very cool that that is what has happened. There's a lot of positives I'm seeing about what this movie stands for, and that is being shown in behind the scenes too, it seems like, from the credits we saw.
Yeah, it's very apparent that every story got to be told, I think. I mean, there was maybe a significant lack of minority representation, like ethnic minorities, but...
But I think that is part of that's the world then, in a negative way. And that is something that that shift was hopefully gearing toward changing.
Yeah.
And I think needs to change now, too.
You want to compare this movie to some recent Tom Hanks films that we've watched?
That's tough. Like, where would I rank it in the five we've watched?
Yeah.
I mean, coming fresh out of it, I want to put it at the top because it's so fresh in my mind. I think that's fair because if this is the first one of everything we've watched that has a deliberate thing to say.
Yeah.
The other ones have been great movies, or some of them have been, most of them except one, have been great movies that are like really entertaining and really funny, but this is the first one that is like Tom Hanks and like full on, this is something we are saying and something that is very topical and so that feels super important and therefore it makes me want to rank it number one right now.
Right. And we've kind of made this, we've jumped out of order. Technically, we're still at the beginning of Tom Hanks' career, where he's playing these, like, fuckboys.
Yeah.
And, like, rom-com dudes. Like, he's very limited in what he's been able to show us in the first three films we've watched, and then Polar Express and The Poster, out of order. And so I know we get to see more of it.
It's cool to see, you know, we've seen these first three at the beginning, and now we've seen his latest, and just comparing that from then. From, like, a maturity level, and also just, like, here as an actor... who has the power to do what he wants and say what he wants to say. And he's picking projects like this, I think, with intent.
There was no Tom yell in this movie.
Not that I can remember. He was yelling, but not the signature yell.
Yeah.
Maybe would have felt out of place, but I still would have liked it. Yeah. Also seems crazy. Is this the first time him and Meryl Streep have worked together?
I think it is, which is insane.
It is electric dynamite on screen.
And I love that there was never even, like... a hint of, like, a romantic relationship between them.
That would have killed it.
It would have been such a waste. And...
There was not any tinge of romantic subplot. No. Even married couples, we never saw them engaging intimately. The intimacy was in their conversations. This movie is just rooms of people talking. And the less people, the more intimate it got in terms of important conversations. And I think they couldn't have picked a better sets of actors to make that... function as a super engaging movie.
Oh, can you imagine what it would be like to be on that set?
I don't know if I get starstruck, but I don't know how you handle that set.
No. Like, the intern who goes to get the information, like, that's me. And I'm just like...
You're just constantly. Sent away.
Given, like, a kind of impossible task, but still does it. Like, he still gets what he needs to. It was good.
And to go back to just kind of like this type of movie and what it has to say, I think it's cool that someone like Spielberg, who's sort of just, his name is so universally known, and I think expectations for his work vary depending on what you think of him. It's cool to see him, when he does a movie like this, he does it with purpose, and the nostalgia that he infuses into his filmmaking works really well here, because it doesn't feel heavy-handed like some of his projects. It feels... like, this is a director with something to say, and he picked this project because he wanted to. It's like his next project is Ready Player One. So he's clearly... Yeah, he's going to go from, like, this feminist topical piece on the importance of journalism and the freedom of speech to, like, video games. So, cool. It's a cool play.
Yeah. All right. Well, that sums up our conversation about the movie The Post. And now it's time for my personal favorite segment, Hank's Happenings. And I don't know that I've got much.
Well, I can start with, I showed some friends while I was home for Christmas the podcast. I got one text from a friend and she commented on Hank's Happenings and Hanks for Listening.
Oh.
She couldn't get over the puns.
Oh, good.
In a good way.
Good.
So you're going to get more.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't stop. It's downhill from here.
Yeah.
Well, that's very nice. I was just reading, and I know I've talked about Uncommon Type, like, a ton on this podcast so far, but this was a piece published about him in the New York Times about that, and he talks about specifically something that I find very interesting, that I think we are complicit in, which is that Tom Hanks is known for playing the nice guy, and he doesn't necessarily want that to be what he's known for, even though he knows that's kind of like, not bread and butter is not fair to say, but it's difficult for him is essentially what was a big point in this article about him, that even when he plays a bad guy, like in Green Mile, when he plays the executioner, he's still known as the executioner who did all the right things and executed people for the right reasons. And there's kind of this, we've both got that bias that we think of him as this like super being, ultimate good guy, Mr. Nice Guy, and we've idealized him, and that might not be what he wants.
I think that could be, that's sort of an interesting thesis of as we move forward with the podcast, because I think we'll go through a lot of the movies that he's known for, but also all of the decisions he made with other things, whether it's in acting, sort of the risky movies that maybe are panned by critics and beloved, or these indie favorites. But also, when we talk Hank's Happenings in his real life, I think what he does outside is just as important as the kind of his how we perceive him.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would be cool to kind of build a new mythos around him.
Yeah.
Because if myth-making is bad, and it can be, sort of this legend worship, like, this will sort of be... It'll sort of let us kind of restructure, like, who Tom Hanks is in our eyes beyond just this cultural icon. What does he do that warrants that title?
Yeah. I just found it very interesting.
Yeah, it's very cool.
There was something else that made me... Something in this essay. Let me see if I was, like, literally reading it while you were setting up.
Oh.
I had my nose buried in it. Oh, I mean, he has some thoughts on Weinstein, which we don't need to keep delving into, but definitely worth a read. I'll make sure that we include this in the blog post for this... episode. Well, there's a lot of buzz about this role in particular.
Yeah.
I did see something about he hasn't been nominated for an Oscar or won an Oscar in a long time. Like since 2000 for Castaway, I'm pretty sure.
Oh wow.
So he's been in like these movies that traditionally he didn't win for Captain Phillips, but he was nominated, I think. He wasn't even nominated for Sully. Silly, I think, was kind of boring. I didn't see it, but I think in comparison to the other films of the year,
yeah,
it wasn't like a standout. And that's kind of his problem. That's super not fair of me to say. But that seems to be something that gets in his way. So he picks these like very traditional stories.
Yeah.
But I don't think The Post is. I don't think this is a traditional...
No, I think this will set itself apart I think it'll be viewed as traditional, and then we'll sort of find new ground and being groundbreaking and important.
Yeah. Well, what about personal stories? Do we have any? That's enough Hank's Happenings, right? Another portion we do is like memories people have of Tom Hanks.
That talk Tom to us.
Yeah, talk Tom to us.
We had one person... on Twitter who got mad at us for not liking Bachelor Party.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know who it was. Someone that found it by the hashtags, I think.
Oh my god.
But they didn't like that we didn't like it. They just kind of posted all these pictures of it and were like, it's a classic.
Oh. Which, well, that's fine.
Yeah, and I expected that to happen with some stuff, because I think disagreeing on stuff that is kind of considered classics, even if I don't think Bachelor Party is, can get that way. But I thought it was cool to finally get our first kind of pushback of someone who's like, no, this is great. I'm like, but why? I want to know why. I like to discuss the why.
Oh, well, thank you for listening. I'm sure he didn't listen.
Yeah, he probably just saw that tweet and was like, oh, these guys.
Well, that's fair. I mean, a lot... Oh, my God, look. He literally put the... That's I know, horrible,
he,
like...
He posts a lot of clips of things we have issue with.
We're like, this is why this movie's problematic. That's a straight butt they're kissing. Whatever. These movies mean a lot to people, and...
Yeah. Well, I think talking negatively about them is definitely getting a response. But I like that. I think that's... I want to hear that conversation.
I do, too.
If you disagree with us, that's... I want to know. We want to talk about it. We're not going to make fun of you. We want to know why. Because that's part of the conversation that makes it interesting.
Well, and right now, I think we've been fortunate in the last... In the first five episodes we've recorded, you and I have been largely on the same page.
Yeah.
I don't think it will always be that case.
I'm looking forward to the one when we're on stark contrast.
Yeah. And we're also hoping that we'll start bringing guests in soon.
Yeah.
People with... Because it's nice. It's nice to have more of it instead of just like, oh, we love this movie and here's why. It's nice to have to hear some different viewpoints. So,
friends and then people working in the industry that either have such a strong connection to a movie, it's something that was important to them, or people who really hate something, because I think that viewpoint is really interesting.
Yeah, and that's what's so important to us as we continue on in the show.
Yeah.
So if you're interested in joining the conversation, talking Tom to us, if you will, make sure that you reach out to us via our website, talkintom.com, or on any of our social platforms.
We got Instagram, we got Twitter, we're on Facebook.
Yeah.
And they're all Pod Hanks Tomcast.
Yeah.
We're still figuring all this out, so we'll respond. We want to hear it. We want to hear all the good and the bad. If you hate it, let us know why you hate it. I want to know.
Yeah, we'll put you on the show. And what movie are we watching next?
So our next movie is The Man with One Red Shoe.
Okay.
Which I've never seen.
Me either.
We're in a string of movies I've never seen. Because we'll release that on January 17th, and then on January 31st, we'll follow it up with Volunteers, which I've also never seen. Yeah. I don't even know if I've ever heard of that one.
And you and I are both, well, we both have copies of Uncommon Type now.
Yes.
Have you started it?
I've not started it yet. I'm going to start it fresh now that it's the new year.
Ooh. Oh, that's part of your New Year's resolution.
Yeah. Got to get some more reading. A lot of movies, got to get some reading in.
Okay. Great.
But I think it would be fun to talk about it.
Okay, so it's a bunch of short stories, so we can talk about a couple of them each week, maybe even like get a mini-sode or part of the podcast, depending on how long we run each week.
Yeah. So if you want to watch, read the first few stories of Uncommon Type, and we'll talk about those, too.
Yeah.
We'll just keep bringing different Tom Hanks things into it.
All right. Well, I think that wraps it up for us. As always, my name's Josie.
I'm Daniel.
And
Thanks for listening. Just punch the microphone. Cool.